Cliff. Again, thank you for coming. Dharma talks are usually about maybe a half hour long, so and a little bit of a discussion before or after or during if you feel like interrupting. What we've been studying here is we just had a week-long intensive retreat in which we basically sat for a week in Zazen and studied teachings of a very ancient Zen master named Hongji. And this book, Cultivating the Silent or the Empty Field, is studying what he calls silent illumination. That's the practice of Zazen, just sitting. But in sitting Zazen, probably the most important thing is to sort of settle yourself and to come back to your physical body, your awareness of your bones and flesh, essentially, that are really doing the sitting. And also your breathing, which is more or less your connection of those to the external world. And then if you have that attention, be aware also of what's happening in your mind, usually thinking, a wide variety of thoughts. And as you sit, more and more thoughts will just come flickering through. And the way to sit in general is just to keep coming back. Keep returning to this present. Now just us, this immediate space, this presence almost that's palpable in the room. You can feel through your skin as well as your eyes and ears what's happening in the room. Then if you continue that and continue to pay attention to your breath, pretty soon you'll realize that your mind is drifting again, and you're thinking about what you're going to do next, or maybe remembering what happened earlier today, or thinking about some aches and pains in your body. You just come back to, when you realize that, come back to the present, come back to this current bones and flesh and sensations and breathing. I would like to dedicate this talk to our guiding teacher here at Jikoji, who's absent, who's been gone for, who will be gone for a week or two. He is Michael Newhall, and also to many other teachers in this lineage. I think you're Angie Boisvane and Ian Forsberg, Vanya Palmers, many others. All of these are in the lineage of Kōben Shino Otogawa, who was the original Zen teacher who came to America in the late 1960s, I think, and eventually wound up founding this place and teaching us all Zazen. He was a very inspiring person, very down-to-earth person, very easy to get to know. So, also important to be mindful, just be aware of your breathing, thinking. That's another way of saying return from mindfulness. Also, sitting upright helps a lot in maintaining that mindfulness. So, we talked about in the sutra that we chanted, upright, sincere, without pride. This is the upright posture. And you'll notice in it thoughts and emotions, impulses, sensations. But coming back to that. And also investigating dharmas, which are, you know, major questions of our lives, like how things are, what this is, who am I, what is. So with mindfulness as base, and given also investigation of dharmas, we go through naturally all the sensations, and eventually arises some feeling of joy in the practice, and some equanimity, and also various levels of concentration. At the lowest level of concentration, where we sort of begin, is the just sitting upright, investigating dharmas, thinking and pondering. If we practice that for a long time in Zazen, we eventually, there again is this joy in the practice and being able to sit. But eventually we tire even of the joy and the pleasure, and go to another level of sitting, which we call non-thinking, just sitting non-thinking. So we watch our breath, and we watch our thoughts, and we watch our impulses. And eventually we go even beyond that level to non-hindering. The five hindrances in Buddhism are probably very important. They're, the three most important are anger. You might get angry, or greed. These are also called attachment and aversion. You attach yourself to something if you want something. If you don't want it, you push yourself away. So there's this greed and anger, or attachment and aversion, grasping, pushing away. Those things are evident in your sitting also. But eventually you can sit just sitting, non-thinking, non-hindering, even beyond pleasure and pain, which you're doing now. You know, you're sitting and you have pain, most of you, in the way you're sitting and then trying to be attentive and mindful. When that happens, there's also the boundlessness kind of feeling. You don't have any mental activity, so you don't sort of have the concept that you're inside a skin, but instead there's a feeling of transparency. And that becomes sort of a connection to the outside, infinite space, infinite consciousness. No thingness, everything's interdependent. Buddhas go much further, I'm sure. Sorry. But do wave your arms if you're not hearing me, if I'm not speaking loudly enough. I'll try for more volume. The six paramitas, the six perfections of Buddhism in sitting, also in daily life, were described by Milarepa as being the first one is generosity, just being generous. It's part of our nature. And that is to just not clinging to self, not even holding a perception of self. In this sitting practice, there's no necessary me or belongingness. There's also morality, not being dishonest with yourself. And patience, or inclusiveness, including everything, not fearing what is true. And practicing continuously, just resting in this present presence, just sitting. You begin to know directly how things are, and some subtle knowing. So going back to the ancient teachers, the topic of the talk. First there was Buddha. Of course, he was the founder of Buddhism, of course. And the notable teachers, the most notable teachers, may have been after that Bodhidharma, who brought Buddhism from India to China, where it actually flourished and blossomed. And after him, perhaps Hongzhi, maybe hundreds of years later, who is noted for insisting that this process of sitting, awakening, is something that can happen anytime, something that you can do, essentially. He gave a lot of talks. After him, in my mind, the most notable person who stands out is Hongzhi, and then Dogen. Those are perhaps the four most important figures in establishing our modern practice of Zazen. And Hongzhi's practice, he called silent illumination. And he had a particular poem in here that I would like to go over that was called variously the acupuncture needle of Zazen, or the point of Zazen. The poem's about 20 lines, so he says, "The essential function of all Buddhas, the functional essence of all our ancestors, is to know without grasping a thing, and to illuminate without encountering a thing. Knowing without touching things, this knowledge is innately subtle, illuminating without encountering objects. This illumination is innately wondrous. With knowledge being innately subtle, it never engages in discriminative thinking. With illumination innately miraculous, it never displays the slightest identification. With never engaging in discriminative thinking, knowledge is unusual and not to be measured. With never displaying any discrimination or identification, illumination is complete. There is no grasping. The water is clear right down to the bottom. A fish swims like a fish. The sky is vast without any end. Birds fly into our extending vastness." The book has practice instructions. Actually, it's a book by Dan Layton, and has many, two or three paragraphs, roughly, practice instructions. I think 59 of them. And just to give you a flavor of them, I'd like to read one or two sentences. "The bright boundless field. The field of boundless emptiness is what exists from the very beginning. You must purify, cure, grind down, or brush away all the tendencies you have fabricated into apparent habits. Then you can reside in the clear circle of brightness." The interesting thing to me is that you must purify, cure, grind down, or brush away. Brush away is an easy option for all of us. We can do it instantly. We can just, you know, return to this at any time. But if you're like me, there may be, it's almost like brushing away is like brushing away flies. You brush them away and you have this clarity. In my case, it may be thinking or words that come back, and some ideas of going this way or that in the talk. And to maintain clarity, return to the posture or breathing, awareness, mindfulness, patience works until the next onslaught. So I want to turn from Hanji to Dogen, Zen Master Dogen, who commemorates Hanji. And he talks about this particular poem, The Point of Zazen, in his book. This one is Beyond Thinking, A Guide to Zen Meditation. And what he says of this is, some masters, remember that there have been like 1600 years of Buddhism before Dogen, so there have been a few masters, have written texts entitled Essentials of Zazen. A few others have written Rules for Zazen. A few more have written The Point of Zazen. Among them, none of these text titles, Essentials of Zazen, are worthwhile. No version of Rules for Zazen clarifies the practice. They were written by those who did not know Zazen. And so on. So, to my mind, what that says is how highly he valued Hanji's teaching. And he goes on in this book to almost sentence by sentence give us a paragraph that describes what Hanji had in mind with each sentence. For example, the poem starts with the hub of Buddha's activity, the turning of the ancestors' hub, is known free of forms. To me, that says that not only there's this activity, what the Buddhas were trying to accomplish, the progress that they were trying to work to sustain, is not in things, it's not in thoughts. Free of things. And illuminated beyond conditions. So independent, the illumination and the freedom of forms is maintained. Dogen goes on to restate the poem. He says it also can be said this way. The hub of the Buddha's activity, the turning of the ancestors' hub, it moves along with your non-thinking and is completed in the realm of non-merging. And also, you can read non-merging as non-attachment and non-aversion. As it moves along with your non-thinking, its appearance is immediate. That is, completed in the realm of non-merging or non-attachment, completeness itself is realization. When its emergence is immediate, there is no defilement, no separation. When completeness reveals itself, it is neither real or apparent, or you stay in neither the general nor the particular. and so on. The point of Zazen can be taken to mean the still point, or the turning point, or what's happening in Zazen. Nothing, basically. Not accomplishing anything and not attaining anything is particularly important in Zazen. Not trying to get anything. Trying to make yourself be in some particular condition, just sitting. We talked about the relation last time between therapy and Zazen, and the use of the acupuncture needle suggests that there is some point of. And one person commented on her acupuncture practice and using it to redistribute chi or energy in your body. And as therapy, Zazen is extremely limited. I've practiced for 50 years and I don't know that I've accomplished anything in terms of therapy. So it's probably the wrong way to go. There are many, many more effective therapies now in the West available to everyone. But it is a kind of therapy, and this there are many papers that address, in some sense, what Zazen adds to the usual therapeutic methodologies, which I think is in this non-self, the idea that what we're feeling, what we're thinking, what we're doing is not just us. It may not even, there's no self in it, actually. There's nothing that belongs or is necessarily mine, except for my bad habits and tendencies. So that's important to cut to mind. Next week, for those who are interested, there's a 2 p.m. discussion. There'll be the usual Sunday talk. It will be sort of focused on death. And the 2 p.m. discussion will be on religion and death. Trying to understand maybe how Buddhism relates to religion first. Buddhism is a religion, but in the same sense it has some potential. It's called religion before religion by Suzuki Roshi. So we'll be trying to sort out that, and also the fact that many religions, the primary portion of the religion is to there's the potential of an afterlife, and there are many, many intelligent people who will argue on both sides of whether there is an afterlife and how the world and how the universe came into being. But what we hope to accomplish is to look at that possibility as opposed to death itself. And that's another resident and teacher who will be discussing that. So hopefully those who are available would come by for that discussion. It won't be a talk, it'll be a discussion at 2 p.m. The talk will be earlier at this time. I wanted to end my formal talk pretty soon by mentioning a couple of things from different teachers. One from Thich Nhat Hanh that I find is very inspiring, but I'm not able to somehow actualize it. Thich Nhat Hanh says that peace is all around us and within us. But that is not some theory or ideal. It is instead a matter of practice. that same statement can be taken to apply to any of the Platonic ideals. Love, happiness, maybe, truth. True nature, our individual natures, what we were born with, essentially, maybe what we were before we were born. All those are around us and within us. We can sort of sense that. I think most people know it, but actualizing it and making it live in day-to-day life is another matter. And practice is important. Zazen is one way. Going back to Hongji for just one brief minute, one of the chants that we have that is called the guidepost of silent illumination, I won't go through it, but it ends in our school's affair, the point of Zazen, hits the mark, straight and true. Transmit it in all directions without desiring to gain credit. So the silent illumination is something that we hope to extend. There's a poem that Michael, our guiding teacher, circulated to the residents here, Buddhas, that comes from the Lotus Sutra. That's fairly brief, so I'll read that also. Then Buddha says, "You should know, Kashyapa, that like a cloud covering, protecting, and resting upon the world, and rain falling everywhere, bathing all things, washing the face of all existence, that the Tathagata and those honored in the way are that cloud, are the rain that protects and cleanses all living beings. So look upon all things without exception as equal. Have no interest in favoring one over another, or in cherishing one or hating another." So I think I'm done, and I would welcome any questions or any comments or discussion. We still have 10 minutes, perhaps. Yes?
When you last became angry, did you try to put yourself in a different state? And if so, how?
Not when I became angry, but when I became aware that I was angry. And yes, I do whatever I can to kind of bring that around. That's usually most, well, would you care to comment since you're a psychotherapist?
I think my understanding of the Zen way is to be aware of the fact that you are angry.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the first point of without judgment or beating yourself up for having that anger. Just accept the fact that you are angry at that point. I think without that first point, the next point is not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's the hardest thing, without judging yourself, to realize I am really angry right now. And that, and some people beat themselves up for that, or some people beat other people up for that. So, you know, so So I think no harm, because if you beat yourself up, it's harm to yourself. It's beat other people up, it's harm to others. So at that point, you have a choice as to what. So that turning things around that you mentioned, I think that's very individualized in terms of how you turn that around. That you have to find it, I think.
Okay, thank you.
In Zen, we're studying the self. We're studying ourselves, and so we get different opportunities to study ourselves. And anger is actually a great opportunity to study ourselves. And the one way I like to think about it is that actually anger is just one of many possible responses to probably fear, but other strong emotions. And some of us have a tendency to turn that inwardly, and others have the tendency to turn that outwardly. And in Zen practice, we cultivate a way of noticing the connection between the preceding condition to our anger, whether it's inward or outward, and the response to it. And it gives us a little window. You know, there's like a little window after the preceding condition is recognized. There's a window before which the response comes. And so we cultivate that window. And speaking of Thich Nhat Hanh calls this looking deeply. There's a kindness, you know, in looking deeply, there's a strong kindness toward yourself. That kind of looking deeply takes it takes honesty and courage and a little patience. And so we try to cultivate those things here.
Thank you. I had, just a minute, Tom. I had one part of my talk that I forgot to say that I think is important, so I'll go ahead and say that. And it's from Koban, the founder, and I wanted to finish with that. He said, "Not to feel the importance of your life is as important as the historical Buddha. That is a conceit. Do not be caught by valuing or evaluating." Utter trust in your sitting appears as a continuous effort of keeping the finest posture you can make. Most important is this continuous effort and alertness.